I think there's no secret. I'm not really a fan of the show. It's not something I ever would have signed up for. Cameras come in my house and talk, you know, see everything, the pictures of my home, my bedrooms, my closets, my everything. And then to have the producers have the ability to edit it whichever way they want. And everybody knows The Housewives is edited specifically for drama.
Yeah.
They cut out all the good stuff and they just give you the drama. So it's always some type of waste.
You bought your first property at 25 and you mentioned that you had put all your money into that.
I got a loan for $600,000, got all my money back out of the deal, and it was cash flowing about $5,000 a month come January. And at that point, I was hooked. I said, this is way better than being a stockbroker.
What is going on, everybody? Thank you for coming and checking out another video. My name is Weston Kirk. I'm a real estate agent here in Frisco, Texas. And today I've got a very special guest joining us. He goes by the name of Todd Napola. Now, Todd is a very successful commercial real estate investor. He is a well-known public figure from The Real Housewives of Miami. And he is also an author. He wrote the book Keeping It Real on Commercial Real Estate, The Right Answers to All Your Real Estate Questions, which I will link in the description of this video. But the objective of this video today, since Todd has been successful in so many different areas of life, is I really wanted to get a good understanding of the full story of Todd Napola from the very beginning up until where he is today. And I'd like to try to highlight some of the biggest lessons that he's learned throughout his journey. So Todd, thank you so much for joining us today. I really do appreciate it. And like I said, I wanted to start from the very beginning. So tell me a little bit about your upbringing. I mean, did you come from a wealthy family? Were you poverty, middle class? And I'd like to just kind of know what kind of student was Todd Napola, and we can kind of go from there.
All right. So I was born in 1972 in Staten Island, New York. Great family. I was lucky. I had great parents. They raised me for a long time. We weren't rich. We weren't poor. I guess we were middle of the road. My dad was an engineer, worked for a big company out there, and he did the warehouses for supermarkets. And it was the distribution centers, not the actual supermarkets. And he worked there till about 79, 80. And when the economy turned, he got laid off and had no job. So at that point, he went into the car sales business and he started selling cars out of the house. Then he started a used car lot. And from there, he started buying used car lots himself. And that's what got my family kind of really going into real estate. What kind of student was I? I was not a very good student. My teachers always said I talked too much and I didn't pay attention. But the truth is, it's not these diagnoses people talk about, ADDs or ADHD. It's just I was bored. I wasn't interested in school being taught about a war from 100 years ago or things that had happened. I didn't want to sit still, so school wasn't my thing. I never planned to go to college until all my friends were going to college, so I said, shoot, I better go do something. So I went to community college, and truth be told, I tell people all the time, very little of my success in real estate or business comes from anything I learned in school or college, other than obviously the basics in life. It all really came from applying in real world situations.
So you were a stockbroker originally, right? And that's where you kind of earned some money to put into real estate. You bought your first property at 25 and you mentioned that you had put all your money into that. I know you've told that story a few times, but if you don't mind sharing that again.
Sure. So when I graduated college, everybody wanted to be a stockbroker at the time. The movie Wall Street was hot and everybody wanted to be Gordon Gekko and Bud Fox. It was the cool thing to do. And the truth is there was a lot of money in it. So from my generation to relate to what you guys did now, it's like your Bitcoin and your NFTs and stuff. So everybody went into that business that I knew. And luckily, when you bought a stock in the morning, by the end of the day, it was up. And you weren't smart. You were just lucky because the market was on fire. This was the dot-com times. And that went straight up till 2000. And until about 2000, when the market tanked, it was a really great time to be a stockbroker. But I had always known that from working. It was only going to last so long because if you didn't go to work for a day, you didn't make a commission, you didn't get paid. So I was lucky to be making pretty good money. And what I wanted to do was find another business that would pay me on the side. And I looked at everything. And I mean, anything I could get my hands on, I was reviewing. And I was really close to investing in payphones, which thank God I didn't. I looked into ATM machines, but they weren't really pay when you sleep because you actually had to go and stock up money and take care of them and fix them when they broke. So I found real estate. And back then, this was 1998. The market was tough for real estate. Nobody wanted to buy real estate. And there was a property I'd see all the time with a for sale sign out front. And I called the sign. It belonged to a bank up in Canada called Gentra. And they told me they wanted $600,000 for the property. They foreclosed on a guy for a $1.2 million loan. And what a great deal I'd get if I bought it. I offered him $575. I don't know what I offered him, but I wound up paying $575. I thought it was great because I saved $25,000. And I closed on the building in June of 1998. That time I bought it, there was 7 tenant spaces, but 3 of them weren't occupied. But because of the foreclosure, the other four tenants' leases were void. So technically there was no leases in the property, but there were four tenants. So it was cash flowing from day one. So I got in my car, I went over there. I was a 25-year-old guy. I knew nothing about business really because I was only a commission broker. And I was so happy to introduce myself and shake all the tenants' hand and say, I'm the new owner of the property. Look at me, let's do a deal and let's do a lease. And the four people did. And this was, by the way, the last time I ever told anyone I was the owner of the building because you don't want people to know you own it. And then I went out and started leasing the property and renting the first space and the second space and the third. And I would say by around October, I had the building full. My friends and I had painted the building, cleaned up the building. It's the cheapest labor you could get. They'd come with me at nights and weekends. I'd bring some pizzas and beers and pay them cash just to get the job done. And right around October, November, I reapplied for a new loan. And in December, the same year, 6 months after I closed, I refinanced it. It appraised for $800,000. And back then you were able to pull your money out a bit easier. I got a loan for $600,000, got all my money back out of the deal, and it was cash flowing about $5,000 a month come January. And at that point, I was hooked. I said, this is way better than being a stockbroker. I'm going to get $5,000 a month for doing nothing, and I have my money back. And a few months later, I bought another and another and another, and it's been 25 years, and I still own that first property today.
When you decide that real estate is that avenue that you want to take, did you go back and forth between whether you wanted to invest in residential or were you just set on commercial out the gate?
You know, everybody asked that question. It's such a great question. I'm glad you asked it too. I saw this building for sale. It was a cool warehouse. I liked cars. It was an automotive service center. It had like a brake shop, an auto detail guy, a glass guy, but all auto. I said, it looks cool. I'll buy this. I didn't think about multifamily office. I just saw this building when I would drive around all the time. It was a good looking warehouse. So that's what got me into it. And from there, I went and did the same thing with a similar property right down the street because I started there. But for no particular reason did I pick industrial real estate because my first was an industrial property over anything else, other than the fact that it was for sale.
Could you highlight some of the pros and cons of investing in commercial versus what you've seen in maybe some other sectors?
Commercial real estate for me is fantastic. People ask me a lot of times too, why, like you said, why commercial versus retail or residential? The truth is you got to pick what you love. And some people love residential. My aunt loves apartments and she's obsessed with her tenants. And, you know, on Sundays she brings them flowers and she bakes them cookies and she loves it and she would never go near commercial. I'm the complete opposite. So both real estate forms are right. You could pick any asset class you like. It could be office, industrial, self-storage, hotel, whatever you like. But you got to really like it. If you're not enjoying it, it won't be fun and it won't be worth it. But you got to find the one you like. No one is better than the other, in my opinion. Just find the one you like.
So you mentioned that pretty quickly after you acquired the property, you were able to refinance, get some of that money back and start cash flowing. Then you mentioned that you purchased another property of a similar type down the road. What were the kind of the struggles or what was the decision-making process whenever you decided to make that second move? Because like what I'm really trying to get an understanding of is how you really went from that one property all the way up into the company that you have today. If you could kind of break that down for people, I think that would be very valuable.
Sure. I'll give you the really great answer. And this is great for everybody in their 20s and 30s to understand. It happened on accident. It happened because I was going day by day managing buying properties. I had a property manager. And in 2000, like I said, the stock market crashed and I was paying her more money than I was making as a stockbroker. So I decided to manage my own properties. And from there, people started saying, can you help me manage my properties? Help me lease my properties. So I kind of built this company and very quickly it was starting to take off. But come 2008 and 2009, when people had real problems with their properties, we blew up. I mean, we got millions of square feet of properties because people really needed help. So it kind of happened on accident. Not buying the property didn't, but building the company did.
And on that second property, I mean, was there any hesitation on moving forward on it? Or was it just kind of full momentum once you got started?
You know, after I bought the first property, because when I went to the closing, everybody told me what a fool I was. I tell the story all the time that the guys I worked with, the stockbrokers, they were literally like, not a word is bullying. They were bullying me in the office. And it was a big room full of all young guys, 20s and 30s. And they would pick on me. They'd say, you took all your money and you bought a property to make that little bit of money. You could have bought a stock and made 10% a week because stocks were going up. And they did everything to talk me out of it. The lawyer who did the closing for me at the time was probably 50 years old. I was 25 at the time. When I told him my plan, he was like laughing at me. And I was like, this guy's laughing at me. And I'm like, oh God, what did I do? But once I went into action and I didn't really have some fancy game plan, what I did is I went to Office Depot and I bought these templates of leases there that were like 5 pages and you'd fill in handwriting, you know, the name of the tenant, the dates, the terms. I didn't even have QuickBooks. I went and I got a bank account and they give you those old-fashioned black checkbooks where, you know, you write the check stub on one side, you handwrite the check. But between paying the landscaper, the FP&L bill, the mortgage, and the waste company, that was really it. You know, it wasn't that complicated. You paid the insurance once a year, the taxes once a year, and then you realize you're in business. I'm collecting 7 rent checks a month, and I'm paying 5 bills a month, and that's it. And whatever's left is left. And you realize very quickly, this is a pretty good business.
No, and I like that you shared that because that's super relatable. I have a buddy of mine who we're about the same age. I'm 28. He's probably 27. And he's on his second or third just single family property that he purchases and rents out. Obviously, his goal is to transition from that 9 to 5 to get more invested in real estate. And that's what everyone at his office will kind of hit him with is, how many properties do you need, man? Like, you know, kind of seems like a little discouragement. But you mentioned in another interview I was watching that one of the biggest pieces of advice you would give people in this investing world is to really go against the grain right now with such a weird climate and just the economy and in real estate. What would you see as going against the grain in today's market?
That's a good question. So I'll give you an example. In 2020, say from January 2020 forward, everybody was talking about retail's dead, retail's over. You know, COVID hit like in February, March. And between that time and the next 24 months, between the beginning of 2020, say, to the end of 22, maybe, we purchased over 700,000 square feet of retail space where nobody wanted it because Amazon was going to be the killer. Nobody was ever going to leave their houses anymore. And we bought a lot of retail real estate because it wasn't in demand. Now the tune is changing, and now they're starting to say people do want to come back out. People do want to start, you know, circulating and socializing. So retail real estate is getting very hard to buy again. But you got to get comfortable being uncomfortable because you got to go against the grain. If everybody wants to buy like industrial, like they wanted to buy in those 2 years, I bought one building for 10,000 square feet in that same 2 year period, but 700,000 feet of retail. That's the switchover. You couldn't touch industrial, and you still can't touch industrial. So you got to be willing to stick to your plan and go with what you believe in and go with your gut.
Do you think right now, because that's a question I'm getting all the time, is it a good time to buy real estate? And I've answered this plenty of times, but what would your answer to that be?
My answer is it's always a good time to buy real estate if your timeline is 5 to 10 years or more. If you're a flipper and you want to buy and sell properties, that's not my game. And I don't really consider you an investor. I consider you a flipper. I wouldn't even begin to speculate on that. But if you're telling me you buy real estate like I do with a timeline of forever, it's always a good time to buy property. You're never going to be able to bottom the market or top the market. You're never going to get bottom or top interest rates. You got to go in with the property that you like and a system you like and just go for it. Maybe you paid a little bit too much, but if you hold it over time, you'll always be right.
That's what I tell people too, is historically prices don't typically go down for a long period of time in real estate. So when there is that direct correlation between interest rates being high and property values being a bit lower. So, you know, if you can save a lot of money on when everyone is kind of on the sidelines and rates are a little bit too high, then they can always come back and refinance and then they get the discounted home. And then, you know, so long as they can afford that monthly payment at the higher rate for that period of time. Obviously, you don't want to overextend yourself, but yeah, no, I think that's really good advice from your book, Keeping It Real on Commercial Real Estate. Yeah, there we go. Which link to that is in the description of this video. What are the biggest takeaways people should expect to get from that?
Well, in this book, I really tell my story, how I got into real estate, the kinds of deals I do, what I do when I buy a property. But I also talk about other ways because like I don't buy triple net assets like Starbucks or Walgreens, but I tell you how you can do it. I tell you the good and the bad of it. I talk about buying office, industrial, retail, multifamily, everything in it. But I also talk about if people want to invest in REITs and things like that. And you know, there's a million different ways to invest in real estate. So I give you all those stories. The really biggest takeaway, the reason I wrote this book is because I had a lot of interns in my office. And from there, I wanted to teach more and more, which is what I started doing. And I started doing videos on Instagram and stuff. But the real takeaway from this book for everybody is the sooner you invest in real estate, investment property, regardless of the asset class, the better off it's going to be and the easier it's going to be to enter. The greatest gift I had is that I entered real estate when I was 25 years old. I was single. I had one car, one rental apartment. And, you know, it was me. So it was no big deal. If I had to start investing in real estate now at 51 years old with a wife and kids and college payments for my kids, it gets scary and riskier. When I was 25, hell, if I went broke, who cared at 26? I was still ahead of the game. So, I mean, obviously I cared, but who really cares if you restart at 26 or 30? So the sooner you could get in, the better. So if you're 25, 30, 35, 40, you got to go. The other thing is the properties that I bought when I was in my 20s, they're worth most of them 10, 15 times what I paid for them, not in day one, not in day 10, but decades later. So now I look back and people say, oh, you have all this real estate. I've been buying real estate for over 25 years. And that's what it takes. And when you talk about the families that are billionaires in real estate, all of us say New York City or California, or even you know Texas, where you are, this isn't always the first generation. These guys that own billions of dollars, this is second and third generation of owning real estate. So if you really want to set up your unborn kids, when you don't even have, a wife yet, forget about kids, you buy real estate at 25 years old. Let's assume you get married at 35 and have kids. Your kids' kids will always be set. So the sooner you could start, the better.
I would like to get into a little bit, because I do think this is going to tie back around into your overall personal branding and business. You are the husband of Alexis on The Real Housewives of Miami. How did you and Alexis meet?
Well, we actually met in Miami. So Alexia was not on the show at that point in time. There was no show. He'd taken a hiatus or break, whatever you want to refer to it. And we're obviously both single. And I was in a restaurant, and I was sitting there, and I was actually having an espresso, and there was like a bench, and she sat down next to me, and I was not trying to pick her up or get her name. She was just sitting there next to me. We were just talking for like 5 minutes, and I was so impressed by her, and she got up and walked away. I don't even think I knew her name, and I was like, who the hell is that girl? And then, thankfully, Miami is a big city, but a very small city. After that, I started seeing her around, and I would say it took probably 5-6 months before we went on the first date. And then from there, it's been ever since then. So we've been together for about 7 years now.
She wasn't on the show when y'all first met.
Well, she had been on the show. They did season 1, 2, and 3, but they put it on pause or break, whatever they properly refer to it as. So there was no filming. There was no show.
Okay,
got
it.
The show came back actually after we got engaged. The show came back then.
What kind of impact has that sort of publicity had in a positive way on your business, if any? You've been doing this for a lot longer before you met her, but just curious how that kind of impacted once you were known on the show.
It's a good question. I believe that the show does provide a lot of benefits to people differently. Certainly, if I was a residential realtor, it would get me a lot more clients because they would know my name. But in what I do, pretty much we manage and lease our commercial warehouses and retail spaces. I don't know how much it would help in that sense. Certainly it helps me get the opportunity to have more podcasts and more visibility of my name, but I don't know how much it really helps. Like you said, the show's been on the air now, come back on the air now for about 2-3 years. This is the third season now. So I have already been in real estate for over 2 decades. So I don't really think it's had much of an impact, good or bad, on my business.
And then my follow-up question to that was, is there any negative aspects that it's brought to your personal life, just having a bigger set of eyes on you?
Oh yeah, it's very hard. I think there's no secret. I'm not really a fan of the show. It's my wife's thing. She loves doing it. It's not something I ever would have signed up for. If Alexia and I had been together and there was no show, I would definitely not want her to do the show. It's a very big invasion of privacy. I am more of a private person in that sense. So whereby I could talk about real estate all day long, that's easy because I let you in on this part of my life. But cameras come in my house and talk, see everything, the pictures of my home, my bedrooms, my closets, my everything. And then to have the producers have the ability to edit it whichever way they want. And everybody knows The Housewives is edited specifically for drama.
Yeah.
They cut out all the good stuff and they just give you the drama. So it's always some type of way. So you need some really thick skin to be on these shows. So I'm not a huge fan.
I love the honesty. Are you able to share any stories as far as some of that going too far, as far as the invasion of privacy?
It's not the people. The people that you meet, the fans are terrific. They're always very respectful, very nice. So, obviously I don't get it quite so much. Alexi, everywhere we go, we got to stop all the time and people want to take pictures and talk. And it is interesting, even when I first met her, people would walk up and be like, oh, how's Frankie? How's he doing? I love this. These people are total strangers, but they really know your whole life, which is different, say, than being a real actor like Leonardo DiCaprio. Say, you only know the role he plays. You don't know anything else about him other than what you see on gossip channels. So these people really know your life. So that's where I say it's kind of like an invasion of privacy, which I personally wouldn't have done. But, when you get married, you have to do happy wife, happy life. But I would never want my wife not to do it because she really loves it. So I just try and limit my presence there because it hasn't worked out fantastic for me.
Last question kind of on that regard, because I don't know how much you stay up to speed on a lot of podcasts and stuff nowadays, kind of the stuff that's trending. And I know one pretty popular topic is the whole red pill manosphere, things of that nature that they're always given. There's always some guru giving advice on how to pick up chicks and things of that nature. So my question is, because you spend a lot of time around people on the housewives, and those are obviously women of status and desirable people, right? What do they look for in a potential spouse or someone they're interested in dating?
I can ask for those women.
Yeah.
let me answer this safely.
Okay.
What I think everybody should do when you want, and look, I was single for a long time in Miami. What I think you got to do is just be honest. And really, people want honesty. And I know I live in Miami, and there's a lot of talk that all women want is a rich guy and all the guys want is a young girl. And that's not necessarily true. Look, Alexia's older than I am. And, you know, when I was single, I could have dated any age group. But she wasn't looking for a rich guy or she'd have a billionaire. And I wasn't looking for a young girl or I'd have a young girl. So you right. want people that have the same values as you and someone who could have a good life with you. And that's really what you got to look for. For me, whenever I'd meet a person, I would always say, just lead with honesty. Don't start the bullshit. Don't start promising them this. And I see a lot of kids your age, you know, your generation, and they see everybody on Instagram going to the $1,000 night dinners. And they take a first date there trying to impress the girl and they can't keep doing it. And I'm like, you're a fraud to start. And then you're blaming the girl.
Right.
Live up to the expectations that you can. And if you find the right person, they'll love you for you.
I think that's great. That's probably some of the more reasonable advice they'll see on the internet. So cool. Well, I have one more question for you before I let you go. Being that I'm a real estate agent here in the North Texas area, obviously someone like you is a client that most realtors would probably enjoy to have, right? What do you look for in a potential realtor specifically? Because I'm in residential and I'm sure you look for a whole different set of skills in the commercial side. But maybe if you don't mind answering what you'd look for in each different one of those.
All right, great. I'll start with commercial because that's my specialty. I love commercial brokers and I respect so hard when they get on the phone, cold call me and they talk to me and I talk to them all the time. And I've been very lucky because I talk to them and I think I even talk about it in my book, like some of the best deals I get are from agents I never even met before. And we meet, I have one guy, he brought me a property. I bought a $14 million building from him. I never even met him. And then he had to leave town. I couldn't even celebrate with him. I met him like 8 months later. So you got to be real with the brokers because they are the lifeblood of the business. So they'll bring you all the deals. But for me to work with brokers, I don't want them just to call me with every single deal that's for sale. I want them to know what I'm looking for. So you got to ask questions, you know, and if they started bringing me multifamily deals, I'm not really the buyer for it. So we're kind of wasting each other's time. So the best brokers know what the buyers want and they fill that void. So if you know I'm looking for Class B retail in these markets in the state of Florida, and you're looking for that, and you bring that to me, you're a valuable source to me. But also understand the deal. Don't just bring me every single deal. Like, you know, you got to have to know how to underwrite the deal and say, look, Todd, this deal makes sense because if you do this, that, and the other thing, we both know this deal is worth more. And I'll say, you're right, let's make an offer. So you got to know the game. When it comes to residential brokers, it's 100% just relationship based. Because the truth is, no residential agent could be a master in every single market. So they got to be a master with their clients. You have to know what your clients are looking for. And your clients will pretty much be similar people. So some of the best guys down here and girls down here, they're fantastic, but it's not about whining and dining at clients and giving them courtside tickets to the heat. It's about being genuine. And, you know, after you close the deal, make sure you reach out to them on their birthday or send them an email or a card for Christmas or something to follow up. Don't just be transactional and gone and wait for the call 3 years later. So if you build that relationship and you're there through the thick and thin, you'll build a hell of a business.
Is there anything before we hop off here that you would like people to go check you out? Obviously, Instagram or wherever you want to direct them.
Sure. You know, I do I do a lot of videos now. These guys have been helping with it with about 3 months now. So on my Instagram, there's a TikTok, there's a YouTube channel. So they have them all there. It's the same videos. They just run them in three different places. Certainly recommend you buy my book, Keeping It Real on Commercial Real Estate. I give all the proceeds of this book to charity, which is why I shamelessly plug it because there's nothing in it for me at all. All the money goes away. So it's a great gift to give people. It's great for everybody in all ages. It's really written for the beginner in real estate or someone who's, you know, just trying to get into real estate. So that's my plug.
Yeah, it's a great stocking stuffer this time of the year. So thank you so much for joining me, man. I've really enjoyed talking to you and hopefully maybe we could do this again sometime, but best of luck to you and all your future endeavors.
Thank you so much, Weston. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Absolutely. Have a good one.
You too. Bye-bye.